Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday with me. I really do appreciate it. Hey, for those of you out there that didn't turn their clocks forward, remember spring forward, we are now in daylight savings time. You know, the thing I like about that from a security standpoint, that means people now getting off at 5 o'clock, 5:30-ish, or whatever the case may be. It's a little bit more light out there as opposed to when it's real dark sometimes when people are getting, you know, getting off. So for me, I love daylight saving times for a lot of different reasons, but that's just one of the benefits of it getting dark way after people get off work. People that are working the standard 8-to-5 type of job. And anyway, hey, listen, we got the results of that survey about the Alabama woman. I'll give that to you in a second. But, you know, just to let you know, apparently they have filed now because they want to speed up her case. And the judge, you know, in terms of her coming back here, it looks like United States District Court for the District of Columbia turned around and told her no. The judge said that there's insufficient grounds to expedite the litigation, which means her case, to be honest with you, probably won't be resolved until late spring or maybe summer to determine whether or not she's going to get back. Now, the issue for her is the fact that the State Department canceled her passport way back in 2016. And that was under the Obama administration. And the Justice Department is taking the position that she does not qualify to be an American citizen under an exception to the birthright citizenship in the Constitution for children of foreign diplomats. That's really what the issue is, and one that I'm sure that's going to be litigated. So just to let you know, we got quite a few responses back. 80% of the responses said no, do not let her back in. Well, that's what it is. I mean, the people out there don't feel comfortable. She joined ISIS. She's had three husbands. I don't know. You know, everybody's opinion, you know, this political atmosphere and things of that nature, it's out there. But right now, my straw poll comes back saying 80% said don't let her back in. So maybe there was concerns because of her ideologies with all of this. They don't want to see her back. It all goes toward protecting ourselves and people being, in my opinion, you know, having those fears about all of this. Well, today we're going to be talking about a number of things. We're going to be talking about Al-Qaeda versus ISIS because somebody had written in and asked me about the difference between the two. We're also going to be talking about workplace security tips. And I always like to do an historical piece, as you know. So today I'm going to be talking about a shooting that was at the Empire State Building. And most people don't even realize that. But there was a shooting at the Empire State Building in New York, which is New York's top tourist attraction, by the way. Okay, so you also know that I like talking about my emails. So let's get into the emails. My first email, Jim, did you hear they are now talking about training attack dogs to attack active shooters at schools and maybe other places? What are your thoughts? Peter from San Jose. Well, look, I'll tell you, Peter, you know, despite the fact that the mass shootings continue to plague us in this country, the reality is that the politicians are continually failed to enact gun control reform. And by the way, I will be talking about that gun reform in a moment as well, a little bit later. So the bottom line is that as a result, Americans are struggling to find alternative ways to stay safe. And some of the school districts are looking at alternative measures. I mean, some of them now have their students using clear backpacks. You know that we've also talked on the show about arming teachers with automatic weapons, guns, pistols, whatever the case may be. Some of them even talking about arming teachers with baseball bats. I understand about the fears about some of these things. There's no 100% absolute. I mean, arming a teacher with a baseball bat. I mean, how is a teacher going to be able to swing at somebody with a gun? But at any rate, you know, the other thing they're talking about with these dogs, and yes, I have seen that about the dogs, but some people feel that these dogs could make the difference between life and death in the schools. Now, I will tell you that after the shooting at the Stoneman Douglas School in Florida, there was a lot of people in that community that advocated for these dogs to be placed in the district schools. So this is not a new concept. They've been working on this, apparently, you know. Now, they say that the security measures, anything that they can put in place that would make anyone feel a little bit better and a little bit safer, is really what they're trying to do. You know, parents are trying to protect their children, and I think that they will do anything to be able to do that. I get it. You know, if my kids were in school during this time frame, I do have grandkids that are in school. And yes, we're always going to be conscientious, you know, about about their protections. Hopefully, you know, these dogs will be controlled. I'm sure that they will be. But, you know, I'm going to tell you something, Pete. At the end of the day, a dog can take someone down, but guess what? They can't stop a bullet. And this is merely, you know, another Band-Aid for a much bigger problem. You know, we shouldn't be finding ways to remain safe during a shooting. You know, during a shooting, we should be focusing on preventing shooting in the first place. I think that's where the issue is, and that's one that's going to be a tough one. And the bottom line is, as people have called in and said on the show, there needs to be common sense gun control laws, and we need them. And I will be speaking about another gun legislation that's been introduced by Congress. So, I don't know, attack dogs. Anybody that's got an opinion about these attack dogs, no attack dogs, you know, you're welcome to call as always. The number is 818-602-4929. I'd be interested in seeing what the listeners have to say about that. Or you can email me. I get a lot of emails, as opposed sometimes to people calling in. But if you feel like calling in, just call 818-602-4929. Or you can email me at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. That's pottsandassociates.com. And by the way, if you want to get my blogs or email blast about upcoming show topics, just simply text Potts Associates. That's Potts Associates. And text that to 22828. Enter your email address and you'll get the topics for the upcoming shows. Again, that's text it to Potts Associates and text that to 22828. And simply enter your email address. And normally around Thursday or Friday, you'll get the show topics. Okay, Pete, I hope I answered your question. Me personally, do I, you know, these dogs, I mean, I like dogs personally. People have fear of dogs. I just don't know, you know, again, I think it's a Band-Aid. There's a lot of other issues that we need to address, in my opinion. But I certainly appreciate parents who are concerned about their children and may want to go to any measure to protect the kids, and believe me, I do understand that. Okay, second email. Jim, you have spoken about guns and CCWs. Hey, listeners, CCWs is really just a consent to carry a concealed weapon. I am curious about buying a handgun. Can you give any tips when considering buying a handgun? Willie from Atlanta. Yeah, I can do that. It's what Willie is talking about. I have talked about this on the show about you know, people getting guns and CCWs, but I know there's people out there that still want to buy them. I thought this was a very good question. I think that you should consult with people that you know that may be more of an expert with this, you know, than possibly I am. But I do have, you know, some comments about it, as well as some tips about it as well. So it really is a good question. And I think buyers need to be more objective and spend more time up front thinking logically and rationally about this. So I'm going to be consistent up front. I think you need to think about this logically and rationally about when you get ready to go out there and buy a gun. Guns can be problematic, as we've spoken about on the show. Look in the past archives. We did a complete segment on, and as a matter of fact, I think it was two episodes on guns and the responsibilities associated with them. But if you're hell-bent on getting them, okay, look, the payoff is in the long-term result, you know, when you buy a handgun. And you got to decide what's going to be the best for you. And you also need to think about, are you going to regularly use it? Because I will say that if you're going to get yourself a handgun or a gun like a rifle or any of those kind of things that are available out there, then you need to be able to use it regularly, meaning that you need to go to the gun range, you need to learn the safety tips with all of this, practice it so if you get into a situation, you can accurately respond with that. And again, when that adrenaline is pumping, it's going to be hard enough as it is. So, you know, use it regularly if you get it. Now, I want you to think about what your primary purpose or goal is for having that gun. You know, and what use are you going to have for that gun? Then when you figure that out, primary purpose and goal and the use for the gun, based upon those two things, that's how you determine the specific features that are going to meet that use. So you sit down, you figure out those things. What am I going to be using it for? What specific features do I want? You know, some guns, they have the, well, you could say features. You could the revolver, which is normally a six-shot versus a semi-automatic. And then, you know, when you actually go to the gun store, talk to them about some things. Some people want to get laser, you know, laser sights on them so the little dot, you know, is going to point at the person and you know you're going to hit the person. I mean, you know, there's a lot of wazoo, you know, things out there. But you should first, you know, I would agree that you should first research and gather, specifications and data that you need to evaluate with somebody that you may, you know, have some faith in and that you think that you can trust to give you the correct information. Now, I know you are asking me that, so let me just tell you once again. First, define your objective or use for the gun. Your criteria and personal preference and features are necessary to accomplish your goal and rank them in importance. You know, I want something that looks nice and shiny, you know, nickel-plated, whatever the case may be. Then establish three or four alternative options that generally seem, that it may have the features that it may have, all right? Now, look, let me give you a quick seven criteria that I think you should take into consideration. The first one is reliability. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, you're looking for consistency or repeated trials with that gun. Can you shoot it today, tomorrow, next week with very similar results? That's what I'm talking about when I say go to the gun. Once you buy it, you need to go and use it on a regular basis. I can tell you when I was on the Sheriff's Department, every month we had to shoot qualifications and qualify. Regular use. So you're going to have to go to the gun range and practice. All right, so you're looking for reliability. You want to be consistent, and that's how you become consistent and learn the reliability of that weapon. Now, durability. Now, look, I'm going to tell you, there are indications the gun will last a long time. Mechanical construction, quality materials used, manufacturer's workmanship, design, and detail. You need to go online and look, you know, for the gun that you want. So when you go to a gun store and they turn around and make some suggestions to you, then in my opinion is what you need to do is then go online and look for comments other people have made about that weapon, the quality of the weapon, mechanical construction, etc., to make sure that it's going to perform when you need it and how long it's going to last. Because I'm telling you, some of those guns are very, very expensive. So you want, if you pay your money, you want it to last. Then you've got the ergonomics. Ergonomics number one, I call it, grip fit. It's the proper fit of the gun's grip to your particular hand and finger size. So remember, everything's not for everybody. Some ladies may want something a little bit smaller. Guys sometimes want things a little bit better, bigger rather. But it's all about your grip when you actually feel it. Now, understand also that when you buy that gun and you're testing it out, you can also take the grips off and put on other grips as well. They'll sell those to you that are a little bit more comfortable sometimes, all right? Now, the other one that I call ergonomics number two is controls. Can you easily reach the slide lock lever, the safety, the magazine release if you're using a semi-automatic, and the various controls? So go through that with wherever you are that you're purchasing the gun. So make sure your hand and your fingers can reach everything, you know, very easily, that it's not an effort for you to do it. My ergonomics number three is going to be your comfort level. Does the gun feel good in your hand, and when shooting it, does it recoil physically? Is that acceptable to handle when you're applying shooting fundamentals? Now, some of that you're not going to know until you actually get to the shooting range. All right, so first, does it feel good on your hand? But just remember, when shooting it, is that recoil going to be something you can't handle? That's very important. So, and like I said, sometimes you won't find that out until you get to, you know, what's comfortable for you, until, unfortunately, after you purchase it. That's why when you're talking to the person you're purchasing it from, ask them about the recoil. Recoil is when the gun goes off, okay, the power of it. You know, and sometimes that's based on the ammunition that you use as well. You know, is the gun going to, when you shoot it, it raises up slightly. For some people, it could go up higher than others depending on how strong they are and with their grip, okay? And the last one is the trigger press. Does it have a short and light trigger press? Is it reset? You know, do you prefer it's long and hard press? I mean, those are things, once again, you know, that when you feel that trigger, the trigger press, is it going to go off, you know, because of the fact that, you know, when you slightly touch it, you know, you pull it back, you need to pull it back a little harder. Those are all the things that you should consider, okay? So at any rate, look, you know, I went through that rather quickly, but I hope that you picked up on it. And again, the shows are all archived, so you could go back and slow the process down. Because if you're going to buy a weapon, in my opinion, I think that you need to keep these seven things or these six things that I mentioned in mind, okay? Again, you understand, that's never my first choice that civilians go out and buy all of these weapons. I think that they can be problematic for people as well. And it may sound easy today, but I'm just telling you, it's not always so easy, okay? Okay, third email. Jim, what are your thoughts on the new gun legislation that once again tries to infringe on honest Americans? And this is only signed a gun toter. Okay, look, here we go. You know, and I chose that one because of the other email that was sent in as well. So I guess we're talking about guns and things, you know, a little bit today. But look, that Congress just turned around and passed or attempted to pass another anti-gun legislation that got introduced into Congress. This stuff is not new. You know, when the tragedy in Las Vegas hit, you know, we all knew that what was going to happen, we were going to have to wait and brace for the shock, you know, and the fallout. And then, you know, several states always want to jump on. States want to jump on, you know, pending these bills regarding, you know, gun control. Gun control is always going to be an issue. Again, anybody that wants to comment on it, 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. To comment on the, you know, on the gun legislation. I mean, I understand that this is a politically hot topic for people. I know some of the politicians, you know, are pushing it. Some are not happy with it. You have, you know, California as an example. They're looking to repeal the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which is basically, you know, protects firearm manufacturers and dealers from being held liable when crimes have been committed with their products. And that would be one that I would think that the callers might like or to email me on this business about whether or not the manufacturer and dealers should be held liable when crimes have been committed with their products. I think that's a very interesting topic for discussion. And then they have another one where they're trying to do face-to-face purchases of ammunition and require licensing of ammunition dealers, and they require reporting regarding bulk purchases of ammunition. So one of the things that they're trying to do out of New Jersey is that measure is designed to eliminate online sales of ammunition. Now, look, to be honest with you, I'm not against that one. You can't just, in my opinion, just sending out, you know, large amounts of ammunition by mail. I don't even know how you can do that. You go to the post office. The post office always asks you, do you have anything, you know, anything that could explode or whatever. So this business about online bulk purchases of ammunition, it probably is going to go to a gun dealer for these gun shows, et cetera. I don't know. But that's one of my opinion that I like. But, you know, again, you know, the people that are the gun toters out there are always going to be upset about these things because they feel their rights are being infringed upon. This particular measure out of New Jersey is designed to eliminate online sales of ammunition. And like I said, I'm not opposed to that. Then they've got some other things that are pending to provide for the establishment of a national standard for incorporating a passive identification ability into all firearms sold into the United States. And that's to require all firearms sold to have smart gun technology. Now, smart gun technology, give me a break. I'm not sure what that's going to do for anything. But, you know, again, it's all out there. You know, we look at these things, and to me, there's a lot of emotions that are associated with these things, and I do get that. They have another one that's pending. They want to reduce gun violence, you know, fund gun violence research and victims assistance and enhance the tracking of lost and stolen firearms and for other purposes. So what do they want to do with that? Any transaction involving at least one firearm would have a $1 fee added to it. The money collected would then be distributed in different ways. I don't know. You know, that to me, I just don't see how that really helps anything. But, you know, we'll see. So recently now bringing you up to date on different pieces that have been out there, so to speak. Now they're looking at the fact that the House passed what advocates call the most significant gun control measure in more than two decades, because this past week it was approved for the first of two bills aimed at broadening the federal background check system for firearm purchases. Now, the vote on the bill, they dubbed it the bipartisan background checks. You guys might have seen that on the news. The Bipartisan Background Check Act of 2019. It was passed largely among party lines, 240-190. The Democrats pushed it because they control the House, and so they felt that it was a good measure. But there's a second bill that's expected to be taken up as well, which would extend the period federal authorities have to complete a background check before a gun sale can go through. Now, understand, under current law, if a check isn't finalized in three business days, the transaction can automatically proceed. So, the House is hopeful that the swift passage of these companion bills will put pressure on the Senate to act. And, of course, the NRA is opposing the legislation, you know, because, once again, there's people out there that feel that the criminals, on the other hand, will continue to get firearms the way they always have, through the black market, theft, and straw purchases. So forcing more government paperwork and additional fees on good people, so they say, and trying to exercise a constitutional right will do nothing to make Americans safer, is what the arguments are. Now, with this new legislation, there are some exceptions. The background check does not apply to transfers among close relatives. I had a buddy of mine who was talking about that one day because he has his weapons, and he was talking about, well, what would happen if something happened to him? Could his son, get the weapons, et cetera? The reality is that some of that people aren't going to know about. So who knows? They're also saying that a firearm could also be loaned to someone using it at a shooting range and for the purposes of hunting and trapping, unless there's reason to suspect the gun will be used in a crime. Well, how are you going to know that if somebody's just borrowing it? You're not really going to know that. You know the problem with all of this, gun toter, whoever you are out there, the realities are we don't know about some of these things. I think there's arguments on both sides with this. But the realities are very simply that if somebody wants to get a gun to be able to do harm, you're going to be able to get a gun. There's no doubt about it. And, that doesn't negate, my feelings that I think we do need to put, a sensible, responsible, bill into place, in my opinion. So I'm not opposed to it. But that's a difficult chore. It's going to be a difficult chore. I mean, the House just introduced this one. And like they said, it's the first time in 20 years where they feel that there's a good measure that's been put forth. And I can tell you that no matter what measure they put forth, there's always going to be controversy about it because it's not going to prevent people from doing some of the things that they do. That's the problem. So, gun toter, I hope I've answered your question, but that's my response. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about this business about Al-Qaeda versus ISIS. A lot of people don't know the difference in all of these things, and I understand that. A couple of weeks ago, a couple of shows ago, I had somebody that asked me, because I mostly talk on domestic terrorism, and now they're asking me about, moving a little bit and talking about international terrorism because people do travel, and they're confronted with issues. So eventually I'll be talking about some safety tips with that, et cetera. But one person wanted to know in terms of talking about Al-Qaeda versus ISIS. Look, my focus basically focuses on comparing Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. Now, in my opinion, I think Al-Qaeda and its affiliates remain a threat to the United States homeland. That's how I feel. Now, while the Islamic State's danger is more to the stability of the Middle East and United States' interests overseas, I get that. But much of the rivalry that's going on between these factions out there, and believe it or not, it involves a competition for their affiliates, with both trying to spread their model and in Al-Qaeda's case, to ensure its operational relevance. For now, I will tell you, just for now, the Islamic State's focus is primarily on Iraq and Syria, and to a lesser degree on other states in the Muslim world, particularly Libya. In the United States and in Europe, it may inspire lone wolves, which is the problem that we have, not only nationally, but internationally. And as I explained on the show before about lone wolves, is that it's hard to predict, you know, somebody that's been radicalized. It's hard to control that. So Al-Qaeda reaches out, you know, to try and find these individuals or inspire these individuals to do things. And that's just the way that it is. But it's not directing its resources to attack in these areas, which is the United States and Europe. And the security services are prepared for the threat. And Al-Qaeda knows that. And let me tell you, Al-Qaeda is weaker and less dynamic than the Islamic State. But the former, which is the Al-Qaeda, remains more focused on attacking the United States and its Western allies. So Al-Qaeda is still posing a threat out there. There's no doubt about it. Just because we don't hear about them all the time doesn't mean that they're not planning and thinking. Trust me when I tell you, somebody's out there planning. Now, somebody once asked me, where did Al-Qaeda come from? Because it seemed like it just came from nowhere. Well, let me tell you, they really emerged out of the anti-Soviet jihad in Afghanistan in the 1980s. That's how far back this goes. And as the Soviets prepared to withdraw, Osama bin Laden and a few of his close associates, and they were kind of high on their perceived victory over the mighty Soviet Union, they decided to capitalize on the network they had built to take jihad global. Now, bin Laden's vision was to create a vanguard of elite fighters who could lead the global jihad project and bring together for hundreds of small jihadist groups struggling, often feebly, against their own regimes under a single umbrella. That was his goal. Now look, by the mid-1990s, he wanted to reorientate the movement as a whole, and he focused on what he saw as the bigger enemy underwriting all of these corrupt local regimes. And who was that in his mind? The United States. Now, you know that bin Laden, you probably don't know, but bin Laden's son now, the United States has a $1 million reward out for him because of the fact that he is the heir to the throne, basically, and word has it that he is in the planning stages for things. So it's going to be interesting. But don't think that necessarily that Al-Qaeda is done, because they're not. We just don't hear about it on the news as much. So we have to be careful. Now, there's a lot of local jihadists that pledge allegiance to Al-Qaeda, and they adopt the Al-Qaeda brand, and they do things. It's kind of on a wide range of things. They try to get money, weapons, logistical support, expertise, and, of course, training. Al-Qaeda training camps, believe it or not, they were the Ivy Leagues of jihadist education. So, you know, they plant these seeds. Now, if you take this a little ways back, the 1998 attacks on the two United States embassies in Africa and, of course, 9/11 made Al-Qaeda's brand a household name. They, as a result of that, they've got their name out there. And when you get a name, people like to follow that name, because the attacks demonstrated the power and the capabilities, the reach, and the sheer audacity of the organization. But I will tell you that although the 9/11 attacks electrified the global jihadist movement and raised Al-Qaeda's profile on the global stage, the United States counterterrorism response to follow was devastating to both Al-Qaeda and the broader movement it purported to lead. Because really, over the next 10 years and past that, hey, the United States relentlessly pursued Al-Qaeda, and they targeted, as you know, like bin Laden and the rest of its leadership. And they also did things to disrupt their finances. That was one of the things when I was on the intelligence team that, in fact, you know, that we were looking for and doing, and the word that we got regarding banking institutions and, you know, trying to follow the money, basically, to find out how the money was getting into their hands. That's all important. So they've relentlessly pursued Al-Qaeda. And like I said, they're getting it every way that they can. That's why you don't hear about them as much. But again, I want to mention, don't think for a moment that they are not out there planning. Now, currently, it's their inability to successfully launch another major attack against the United States. And that meant that the symbol was becoming less powerful. Now, with the death of bin Laden and the ascension of the much less compelling Ahmad Zalahari to the top leadership position, that further diminished the power of the al-Qaeda brand. And again, that's why you don't hear about them as much. So who do we, but again, I can't emphasize enough, that doesn't mean that they are done. Now look, you want to compare the two, according to the person that had written to me. Look, there's five ways I want you to understand how ISIS and al-Qaeda differ. Now, ISIS is a name that we hear a lot more. The current administration is talking about the fights that were basically running ISIS out of Syria as an example. And because of that, that's one reason why this lady from Alabama is trying to get back, because she surrendered. Because, again, you know, this current administration appears to be knocking it out, knocking them out of Syria. But look, I want you to understand, there's five critical differences between al-Qaeda and ISIS. For one thing, understand the structure of ISIS. ISIS is fighting more like a conventional army than al-Qaeda ever did. These guys have troops. Al-Qaeda is doing some of this by clandestine things, but they're not marching troops into places the same way. So al-Qaeda seized territory. They turned around and declared a caliphate in northern Syria and Iraq. And they were also employing more conventional military tactics and using assault rifles and grenades. Al-Qaeda, they didn't seek to do that. They didn't seek to hold on to territory as much as it had been focused on carrying out spectacular, you know, attacks like they did with 9/11 that would seize attention from the international media. And don't get me started on the media, but some of this stuff, that's like you watch some of these movies and you'll see where the person that's getting, like that movie The Siege with Denzel Washington. Think about that on the bus. And when they were looking at the bus and the bus ended exploded because why? Because the media was there. So they like to be on TV. They like things like that. It seizes attention to their cause. Now, since the attacks on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon is continuing to carry out high-profile complex attacks in other places. You guys might remember the Westgate Mall in Kenya, where they did the same thing. Now, al-Qaeda also wants to establish an Islamic caliphate, but it has taken a long-term approach and has discouraged affiliates from going out and doing so. So this is also one of the major reasons why al-Qaeda disowned ISIS. It wanted ISIS to wait on establishing a caliphate. ISIS didn't want to wait. So these two are in competition with each other, you know, to a certain extent. Now, let's talk about brutality. Now, it may seem strange to say this, but ISIS is even more brutal than al-Qaeda, all right? Now, al-Qaeda did what they did, the things that they do, but ISIS has used extreme violence and brutality to attract attention and more followers. And so far, the experts say it's working. They attract disaffected young people that want to kill other people. That's how they operate. That's how they operate. And they've gained national attention by beheading prisoners and enemies. We've heard about that on the news. And then they want to post the pictures of the violence on social media. And there are people out there that see this. There's some people that rally behind those kind of things. But al-Qaeda, in contrast, has shunned that practice because it risks turning off less extreme Sunnis and other Muslims from sympathizing with their cause. So the ISIS attacks anything at a given level. That's what they'll do, while al-Qaeda has shown quite a bit of restraint. There's the difference. ISIS, more brutal than al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda likes the TV, the media, the spectacular events. And that's why, you know, some of the things that we hear from a political standpoint about how the current administration wants this border wall. I'm not bringing up the politics, but what I'm saying, because my specialty was South and Central America, if we have an issue, it could come up through our border. And I am not talking about people who just want to come here for to make a better living for themselves. So don't send me the hate mail. I'm not talking about that. Now, I'll tell you something else that people don't realize. ISIS is more popular with young people. You have to understand that. ISIS now has more followers than al-Qaeda because of the recruitment boom in Syria about what was going on. In addition to that, al-Qaeda has suffered heavy losses from defection or destruction. Now, The intelligence officials say there were more than 30,000 ISIS followers, while experts believe Al-Qaeda's formal membership is much, much smaller. There's the difference. Now, I will tell you that ISIS has also attracted followers because it has purchased an Islamic State and it has a territory to show for it. ISIS has really grown in popularity because they pursued an Islamic State. ISIS has also gained popularity with the young by embracing social media, while Al-Qaeda stuck to more traditional recruiting methods. ISIS, you guys, is smarter than Al-Qaeda. They're using technology, not just the media, to their benefit. Now, the only difference is Al-Qaeda has attacked the United States. ISIS has not done that yet. ISIS has made it clear it wants to attack the United States, whereas Al-Qaeda already has. So for that reason, Al-Qaeda is still considered a recognized leader of the global jihadist movement. But, you know, again, since 9/11 attacks, Al-Qaeda has carried out plots several times over the last number of years against the United States. And they've got the capability to do more, trust me when I tell you. Funding. Al-Qaeda's core has been traditionally reliant on donor funding, where ISIS is more reliant on illicit activities such as selling oil on the black market. ISIS started out with a massive set of criminal enterprises. That's how they got started. And let me tell you something. When I was doing the work that I was doing, I can tell you that Iran and China were sinking a whole lot of money into Central and South America, especially Venezuela. Now, I'm going to tell you something. ISIS is now beginning to draw donations because of their success. So they say that ISIS draws $1 to $2 million per day now. And experts say that although the two groups differ, competition between the two, they don't bode well for us. It doesn't, because we have two groups out there that are looking to harm us. And anytime you have a competition between two terrorist groups, there's going to be an incentive to launch more high-profile attacks to attract more attention. So Al-Qaeda, in my opinion, especially, will be seeking to attack the West to stay relevant. If they can't prove themselves, they will slip by the wayside. And trust me, that is not what they intend to do. So look, you know, we have to understand these things. It's serious. These two groups are looking to harm us. And the reality is, that's what's going to happen if we're not careful. Okay, having said that, let's turn around and look at the workplace security tips. And let me just tell you, secure rooms. Look, let me tell you something about workplace security tips. First of all, I want you to keep in mind that secure rooms is something that every business should do. Now, secure rooms, some people call them safety rooms. All right? Those, in my opinion, you should do. The businesses need to do that by department. But you don't have to wait for your company to do it. Look around in your own area to see where would be a safety room. A safety room is normally one where a door locks, you can close it, there's no windows. And don't rule out janitor closets or other small areas like that. It doesn't matter. So even if your particular employer doesn't have something like that, you could look for that yourself. Just look for it. Where would I go in the event that something happens? And if you're somebody that's in an office, you already have an office, if you don't have a window office, make sure your door has a lock on it. There's other things that you can get to secure the door if they don't want to put a lock on it. Believe it or not, things like door stoppers and other types of door jammers, those things are out there. So you can do that. But find a secure or safe place that you can go that in the event that there's an active shooter on your premises, like I said, whether your employer has done something or not, just use common sense. That's what a safe room would be. I think is what employers need to also do is have keyed access areas where in order to get into certain places, you have to know the combination lock. So we call them keyed access areas. And don't forget things on your desk, heavy things on your desk. Those things can be thrown. I mentioned this in the past. The old paperweights, they work fine. Believe it or not, a full can of soda works fine. Anything that's heavy that you might be able to throw at somebody in the event you get confronted. But I'm going to tell you something. One of the things that I'm going to tell you about, before I get into these other workplace security tips that are made kind of like more for the business, is conflict with employees. Let me tell you something. When you watch these things on the news, what do they always talk about? the shooter goes after who? Normally the supervisor, okay, or the manager. They're first. Because why? They may be the person that fired them, whatever the case may be. But who do they go after second? They go after people that they had conflicts with. So one of the things that I would urge my listeners to do is to look, if you have conflicts with people on your job, and it does happen, look, forget about it. You never know what a person might be capable of doing or coming back and doing. So don't get into a situation where you have conflicts with employees. Just let it go. It's not worth it. All right? So keep that in mind. Because if you have an active shooter come back, trust me, they're coming back after the manager, supervisor, and whoever else it was that created that stress for them in that work environment. So just kind of keep that in mind. Just have a smile. Be nice to everybody. Leave out the office rumors, talking about people and things of that nature, and walk away from situations, in my opinion. Don't get into conflicts with people. I mean, I understand that we live in a very diverse nation. We have a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds working together. There's going to be a certain amount of conflict. In my opinion, it's how you handle it. That's what's important. Now, we have some other workplace security tips that the business, in my opinion, needs to look at as well. And these are for you, too, you know, in terms of employees. The first thing any business should do, in my opinion, is check all the windows and doors. Make sure they're securely locked before leaving and closing up the workplace at night. And then, again, check in the morning and see if anything is missing. And I say this because people do break in. There's situations where people have broken in and they're there. They're already there. So make sure that you're securing all the windows and the doors the night before. The second one, keep all entrances and exits secure at all times. You know, we go out and do these workplace security checks and site assessments for clients. And one of the things that we always look at is whether or not the entrances and exits are secure. You know, some people use combination door locks. And that's ideal for controlling access into the building and maybe even a code or a badge swipe in order to get into the building. They can use cards, keys, ID badge, anything that you have that, you know, a person could use, you know, to get in that's properly identified is important. The poor receptionist, when we go out there, the receptionist is normally the person that's out there by themselves. They're right there at that desk, and sometimes they get a lot of exposure, in my opinion. The third thing is make sure you have a good security system, preferably one that alerts the police or local authorities also in the event that there's something that happens, or maybe even a break-in at night. Only give those password and codes to staff who have legitimate reasons for having it, and then make sure that they change it regularly as well. Because that the security system you never want breached, all right? But I think that all of the alarms should go off. You know, when you have an alarm with the fire department, what ends up happening is that it goes off and the fire department comes there. So they have other things for the police department as well. All right, let's see. Four, if you don't already have one, install a video system. When we go out and do these site assessments, we always look for these video systems where people could see all of the entrances and exits of the complex or the building, and even as well as hallways and stairwells as well. You know, these are important. Receptionists, to me, are good people where you keep the monitor, because on the monitor, the receptionist is there all day and can see different things that are going on throughout the facility. So that's one, and there always should always be a backup. I'm not talking about somebody needs to sit there and just stare at it all day long. So having a couple of them throughout the premises, including something that's looking at the receptionist as well to make sure that he or she is safe, is important. And it's not just five. It's not just the building I want you to keep secure. You know, they have car parks where you have to park your cars, and, you know, some of them keep those locked and secured. I think that's important, the parking areas are being secured, because people are leaving at different times of the day, sometimes evening. I spoke about the daylight savings time. Yeah, people leaving sometimes at night. And, you know, here's a person that thought other people were in the building and now they're by themselves. So your parking structure should be well lit as well to make sure that the individual is leaving at night, or have a policy that you tell anybody that leaves late that they can move their car, closer to the exit door that they would be leaving from. So all they literally have to do is walk out. And don't forget, if it's dark, I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, always use your key. I mean, you know, on your, you know, to light up your car so you can see if anybody is around your car as well. Like I said, especially when it's dark. You know, if you travel to work by car, leave it in your workplace car park. You know, double check your car and your doors and your windows are shut and locked before you go inside. I mean, that's really common sense, and a lot of people do that. They've had situations where people have left their cars unlocked, and now's what happens is that somebody could be hiding in the cars, all right? So don't just think about it in terms of being inside. Also think about outside. Sufficient lighting. Again, you want to make sure that that's out there as well. Let's see. Technology is everywhere and is used in all everyday workplaces. You need things like your laptops and computers. Do not forget. I spoke last year. We had a guest that came on and spoke about the your laptops and computers at home and at work. There's a lot of things going on right now, especially things like ransomware. Next week, we're going to be talking about some things like identity theft, so I don't want to forget to tell you that. Next week, identity theft precautions. We'll definitely be going into that, so please be sure to tune in. But your laptops, your computers, those things need to be protected as well. Don't just think about security in terms of your physical well-being. Computers are important, you know, as well. You know, knowing that your employees understand and know security measures, you guys, in my opinion, is the last essential. Make sure everybody's on the same page, that we're all paying attention to security. Don't just take things, you know, from a lackadaisical standpoint. If you see somebody in the work environment that's out of place, say something. It's okay. Do that. I think that that's very important as well. Okay? So there's some tips for you. The last thing I want to talk about, because it was actually in February, I meant to talk about this in February because I try to talk about some of the historical events that have happened. And sometimes, as I've told you before, we have a tendency to forget things. But I don't know how many of you actually remember this. Now, this is the Empire State Building. Who thinks about going to the Empire State Building and there being a problem? Well, I can tell you, you know, on February 23rd, 1997, Ali Hassan Abu Kamal, he's a 69-year-old Palestinian teacher. He opened fire on the observation deck. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to the Empire State Building. I'm from New York. But the observation deck is way at the top. And it's in Manhattan, and it's in New York City. Now, he only killed one person, but he wounded six others before he took his own life with a gunshot to the head. They took him to the hospital, but he died 5 hours later. Now, the law enforcement at that time ruled it that it was a premeditated attack after finding notes that he had indicated that he was angry over Palestine and Israel. Now, at that time, Kamal's widow stated the shooting spree was not politically motivated, but rooted in his despondency over financial ruin. Now, I can tell you that years later, his daughter revealed that she had lied about it, and that his father's action had, in fact, been motivated by the Palestinian nationalism and not about financial ruin, because the mother gave an account that was a little bit different because he had lost his money in a deal, and he was despondent over that. But that still doesn't rule out that people get despondent over ruined financial deals and, you know, and then they do things. It never ceases to amaze me why they take other people's lives with them under those circumstances. Now, this happened on the 86th floor, is where the observation deck is. That gives you an idea about how tall the building is. Now, sometimes people say, well, what kind of guns do people have? Well, here we go again. This person had a 14-shot, 38 caliber Beretta handgun. See, that's not an automatic. It's a semi-automatic, but it's not a rifle. It's a pistol. And he was able to wound that many people. Fortunately, he only killed one. And I say fortunately. It wasn't very fortunate for that one individual, so I don't mean to downplay that. But like I said, he wounded a number of people before he actually took his own life. And, you know, the sad part about it was that the one guy that got killed, he was just 27 years old, and he was a Danish musician who was just living in New York and played in a band. You know, he came here probably with high expectations. He ended up just wanting to go to the Empire State Building, and he lost his life up there. So these things, you guys, again, the only reason why I like to do the historical pieces, because I think that they're important. that we don't forget these things. Any place is a target. A lone wolf. Lone wolves, you guys. I can't stress it enough. All right. You've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. But let me remind you, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, spread the word. And don't forget, next week, I will say it again, identity theft precautions, guys. You need to tune in for that one because that's becoming a big deal. Well, look, until then, be aware, be vigilant, be safe. More importantly, be a reluctant victim.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.